For me, fashion is a verb. So it's to fashion.
You're listening to Wardrobe Crisis with Claire Press. Join me every week as we look at sustainability, ethics, and the business and madness of fashion. Hello again. What if I asked you about what a fair fashion world means to you? What would you think of? I mean, it has to be about garment workers, right? But it also has to be about those further down the supply chain that maybe get less attention. If you're listening to this episode as it comes out, you might have seen the news last week about LVMH-owned Quiet luxury brand. Too quiet, apparently, because we're not paying enough attention. Loro Piana, known for their very expensive jumpers. So apparently they've been exploiting their indigenous growers in the Andes for something insane like 30 years, basically never paying them, and nobody noticed. I'm going to make an Instagram video about this if you want to know more. You can find me at Mrs. Press. But I want to talk about the other end of the industry when we're considering fairness and equity. Of course, it's outrageous that this supply chain stuff keeps happening, absolutely. And we've covered this many times on the podcast. But there are other areas that fly under the radar often when it comes to how level or not level the playing field is. And these last few eps of the podcast have been looking at the creative end of the system. We talked to Irish fashion designer Richard Malone and fashionademic Ray Rahman. Also about class and race barriers that mean it's just easier for posh white people to get these creative jobs. We talked with the British fashion icon Karen Franklin about that too, and also about unconscious bias and how fashion image makers obsess, continue to obsess over a certain body type, tall, skinny, again, often white. But what about disability? While I was in London recently, I spoke at Westminster. It was part of my, I've got this role with Fashion Roundtable. I'm their global sustainability expert. And for those who don't know Fashion Roundtable, it was founded by my amazing friend, Tamra Jinchik, who is the newly minted Professor of Sustainable Fashion at Bath Spa University. So it's a policy think tank, but it's also, it acts as the secretariat for the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Ethics and Sustainability in Fashion. So that's why I was in Westminster. And this session, it was titled Delivering a Sector Vision for the Fashion and Textile Industry. But it was actually focused on the creative well-being economy. It was a packed out session. There were so many sustainable fashion people there. It was great. And the speakers were phenomenal. We had the CEO of the Trade Charity Shops. We had a fantastic woman actually called Julia Roebuck, who founded Thread Republic. And that's a spin-off from Mend Assembly. Those guys are in my book if you've read Where Next. And Julia's organization is up north in Huddersfield. And we're actually going to do some podcasts later in the year about textile manufacturing there. Who else? Oh yeah, Dominique Muller from Labour Behind the Label. Very interesting stuff. But also, my guest this week, Junior Bishop. Junior is a model and advocate for minority groups who uses the pronouns them and their, and just so happens to be a wheelchair user. And how they began their talk really struck me. So I asked Junior to send it to me so I could share the intro with you. They began, when looking at fashion and media today in terms of who we are as a society, expect to see there is gradually becoming more diversity in what's represented to us. We hope to simply see people who look like us, our imperfections, our flaws, and those things are in inverted commas, the little things that make us who we are. And they said, that is what gives people the confidence to buy and wear items of clothing, as well as finding pride in seeing someone else out there who represents them. The excitement of being able to see someone who is a wheelchair user, a cane user despite their age, or has a limb difference, or has Down syndrome, or has albinism, and the list goes on, they said. Having those with disabilities or their family members tearfully say, I didn't know people like us could do that kind of thing. That is why this movement continues to grow, said Junior. It's really, it gives you goosebumps, doesn't it? And great. Junior's career is going excellently. They've done campaigns for the likes of Sephora, booked London Fashion Week shows. They've just been part of a documentary on Channel 4. But getting to this point has not been easy, and it is not easy for others. So if we're serious about addressing the barriers in fashion, we need to look at this too. Junior shared a sort of manifesto for access in the workplace, a sort of, I'm going to say, like a fashion industry to-do list at this Parliament talk, and you'll hear us discuss it. But it includes things like, people with disabilities are just that. We are people and should be treated with a positive, brackets, not condescending attitude, just like you would anyone else. And also practical things like research how to make your workplaces more accessible, ask real disabled people about their access needs. And Junior also said that the fashion industry is missing out on potential revenue by ignoring marginalized groups. We've heard this before, right? In fact, you'll hear me mention a couple of older episodes during our chat that are related. If you want to go back and listen to them, you can find the links in the show notes. Kia Brown from Disabled and Cute is on episode 128. And Sinead Burke was our centenary guest when this podcast marked its 100th episode. Okay, so Junior's agency is Zebedee Talent. It's fabulous. It's the UK's first inclusive acting and modelling agency dedicated to championing disabled, visibly different, non-binary and trans models. And they've also got offices in LA, New York and Australia. Again, check the show notes for all the links and all the further info. And now let's go and visit fantastic Junior Bishop. Welcome to the Wardrobe Crisis Podcast, Junior Bishop and
Timothy Boy and Reginald Bean are with us also.
Classic. Just for the listeners who cannot see this lovely view that I can see, who are those two?
These are my two Pomeranian Chihuahuas who are very loving and very desperate to be involved, but are sitting on their little doggy sofa, just admiring the view.
Crack up. All right. Junior, we met at the UK Houses of Parliament last week in a session of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Sustainability in Fashion. Sounds fancy. Is fancy. A bit. You spoke really beautifully about a very important issue that I know, but I was reminded listening to you, is under-addressed in the fashion industry. Do you want to just start there and give us a taster of what you told the group?
Of course. So I was invited to speak by the Fashion Roundtable about the inaccessibility in the fashion world and also how AI is coming and taking over all of those, in quotations, entry-level jobs that aren't even accessible to begin with, and how change needs to continue to happen and to grow in order for it to be accessible to everyone.
Okay, I was saying this is an under-discussed topic broadly in the fashion industry, stopping at accessibility, but actually bringing together the issues that we're facing when AI swoops in and removes some of the jobs that do exist is a whole other world. But I just want to stick on accessibility. This is obviously, to me, as a lucky, able-bodied human in a world built for me, just a fundamental right. Like, you should be allowed to get places. It's not like that for everyone.
No, it's not. And you say that you feel lucky in being able-bodied, but I think that I feel lucky in being disabled because I have a different outlook on how different and inaccessible this world is. Just as anyone else with a different disability would also see it differently. For example, someone who has hearing loss or has vision loss, they would see the world completely in a different light. So being able to speak to people in such grand positions who could actually do something about it was just, it was an amazing opportunity and such a, for me, a grand gesture, because not everybody gets that opportunity.
Even just that part where you said you feel lucky to be able to speak to these people in a position to make change, that for me just sounds incredibly galling and annoying.
Yeah, it is very annoying, because why should I have to speak up? Why 100%. Should I have to do anything about it? But if these people who are in power do not have an understanding, it is unfortunately going to be up to me and people who have this privilege to speak to people like this to say something and to educate and to help people understand as much as they are able that these changes need to happen.
Yeah.
And that that these issues do occur on a day-to-day basis, and they're never going to understand unless someone speaks about it.
Absolutely true. Listeners who are not living with a disability, you might get to be in a privileged bubble where the practicalities of access never occur to you. And I can say this because before I was interviewing Kia Brown, after I read her New York Times piece, Disabled People Love Clothes Too, in 2020, and invited her onto the podcast. It's a fantastic episode. We'll share a link to it. I was one of those people who just hadn't occurred to me to think about the privilege I have of running up some stairs to get to a meeting. Or we also did a podcast with Sinead Burke. I think that was episode 100 in 2019. Sinead Burke is a person of small stature, and she was saying it's things like you go to the bathroom and you can't reach the sink. These things that those of us who don't have to deal with really, I think, take for granted, unless someone in your life is dealing with it or you are, I think it is possible that you overlook it until someone opens your eyes.
Yep, I completely see that. The example that I always use is that before I started working in a betting shop when I turned 18, I never even realized they existed. You don't see them. It's like if you learn a new word, suddenly you hear it everywhere, which is why you then want to use that word and get other people using that word. So if I can teach two people, pull your bins in after bin day, don't wait hours because you don't know who's trying to get down the street. Like the next person, like my best friend has learned that. And don't park over drop curbs just because it's convenient to you for 5 minutes, because I might have to then lap the block to try and find another drop curb and go in the road.
Oh, Junior, can I ask you about empathy and compassion just briefly? Because I feel like most people don't want to be that person who blocked access down a street by leaving their bins out. It's not that they lack empathy. It's that they are ignorant or no one's ever told them. When you said that thing about the betting shop, I was thinking about an interview that I did with an upcycling designer, Helen Kirkham, who told me that the reason that she's able to work with sneaker waste from the warehouse at the trade charity shop is because so many people donate their shoes at that time, the shoelaces together, so they get separated. Once you know that, you will always tie your shoes together when you donate them. But until someone tells you, you may not have seen it. I did know about bins and street access. What are other things that people do, not because they lack empathy, but because they haven't taken the time to discover how it might impact someone that isn't them?
Simple things like dropping your litter gets caught in wheelchairs, has broken wheelchairs, like bottles get stuck underneath and we're stuck dragging this bottle under our wheelchair for the next however long until someone can help us. Cleaning up dog mess. I have rolled through and had my coat and my hands covered in dog mess. I have two dogs. I use a wheelchair most of the time and I still pick up after my dogs. It's not that difficult. There are people who use guide dogs and assistant dogs who have low vision and they still pick up after their dogs. So what is stopping someone from who is able-bodied from doing that? If you can't, get help.
You know what? Maybe it is a lack of empathy, because I do think that some people just need to be told once and then they go, oh, I didn't realise, now I'm going to change. But there is also a selfishness or a lack of community feeling that happens when you think of things like littering or the dog stuff.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that until it affects people or affects someone that they love, people choose to be ignorant to those subjects. There are a lot of things that, again, I was not aware of, my best friends weren't aware of. And now they say to me, oh my goodness, I didn't think about the bin thing or the rubbish thing until it started to affect you.
On the day that we met in Westminster, it was tipping down with rain. Can you talk us through the access practicalities of leaving or arriving?
So arriving to Westminster, absolutely fine.
It wasn't raining then,
there
right?
There was no rain. I had actually dressed for rain. Silly me did not bring my rain cover, because I have one that's very similar to one that you put children in buggies in that's waterproof but keeps you warm inside, but it's just very bulky. We left and I was like, it's not that bad. Maybe I will be okay. But I was going straight to a casting. I was drenched all the way through. My shoes, I was wearing multiple layers of trousers, absolutely drenched. I couldn't push myself because, first of all, London streets are built at an angle so that the rain runs off into the gutters.
And actually, oh, just think about it. Think about a slippery pavement. If you walk and you're not in a wheelchair, think about a slippery pavement. It's so confronting when it's terrible weather all of a sudden. Everyone's running. Mm-hmm. Visibility is bad, even if you have perfect vision. Cars don't know what they're doing. People start running. It's slippery. All this stuff is exacerbated if you have extra layers of complexity of moving through the world, right?
You get slippery rims. You can't get under any shelters because people don't want to make room for someone in a wheelchair. I get splashed by people driving in their cars, but they'll avoid the able-bodied people or buggies. And I get hit with umbrellas, or people drip their umbrellas onto me consistently. So I have to hope that if I get stuck somewhere in my chair in the rain, that I'm with someone who is able to push me, get me somewhere safe.
You were with your agent on Thursday.
Amazing. I love Dom. He pushed me. It's his first time ever like pushing me in my wheelchair, let alone around London. And yeah, he got me to a nice warm space, got me a hot drink to try and warm me up, and then managed to get me to my casting and made sure I was safe and secure before he had to leave London again.
Did you go in a taxi?
No, we walked because we were on a bus. We did get on a bus, but there was severe traffic. The bus ended up terminating one stop on. It was not fun. And then people getting angry because they have to wait for the
inconvenience
bus ramp
of someone to.
Yeah.
Really?
And then people tried to rush me off the bus, even though they're getting off. And it's like, I have to wait for the ramp. I appreciate that you wanted me to go first so that I'm out of your way, but I have to wait for the ramp. I can't just, you know, bump off the bus. I'm not a buggy.
Can I ask you why you use a wheelchair?
Yes. So I have a condition called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder caused by a gene fault. It can be genetic, but we aren't sure if my one is. So I have a branch off of many conditions that make me very dizzy, very unbalanced. My hips are the bones grind. I'm prone to dislocations and passing out. And there's just a whole lot more that makes it very difficult for me to walk around.
You said to me before we started recording that it's almost like a tree with loads of different branches of...
Yes. So Ehlers-Danlos is the root of all my issues. It's the trunk of the tree. It's the roots that embed it into the ground. So all of my other conditions that come with that are caused... They are the branches. They are the leaves that bloom. And the blooms happen when I get my flare-ups. And as pretty as a tree is to look at, sometimes you just wish that tree was bare or not there at all.
Oof.
And that's where I have to try and find the beauty in it and doing the advocacy and standing up for people and raising awareness, because you've got to try and take something and just try and make it as beautiful as you can, no matter how bad it may seem.
That is beautiful, Junior. Can I ask you about your work then?
Yes, so I have been modelling I modelled a little bit when I was younger with my mum. My mum's absolutely gorgeous, and we did it as like a family unit. We actually did some modelling for this house. This was the first house built on this street, and we were the show family for it.
Get out. How nice.
And they built the other houses around us.
It's actually lovely here, surrounded by trees. It's winter, so you don't have that feeling of birds. But on the way here, I bet you do.
We get a lot of birds and squirrels and... everything right outside.
Junior, I've got to tell you a weird thing, and I'm absolutely convinced that it's really true. I was walking here and I came via One Tree Hill, which is
One Tree Hill.
It's crazy that it's here. I always look out for the trees, and so I walk this way. On the way, this is not even a lie, and I googled it because it sounds like I'm lying, and I was honestly thinking,
a woodpecker?
No, it was a red squirrel, and I'm like, have you seen one?
In the cemetery. In the cemetery.
I googled it and they said, no, not possible, no red squirrels in London anymore. And I thought, did my mind play a trick? But it didn't, because I saw it and I thought, that's a red squirrel. And then I didn't think properly. Then I saw a grey one and went, hang on, anyway, for listeners who are not in Britain, red squirrels are meant to be goners since the 1920s.
I'm pretty sure in the cemetery in One Tree Hill and the cemetery just behind it, woodpeckers, all the animals that you would never expect to see. I did not know there were woodpeckers around here until last summer. And my next door neighbours were like, yeah, there's woodpeckers down there. We went for a walk and found them.
You and I are animal people. So I feel like there's something totemic or significant. I always think it's lucky to see animals. And I feel like, I saw a red squirrel here. You are here.
Yes.
Magic woodland creature.
We get foxes as well. We have a doghouse outside just in the front garden, and they come and stay in the doghouse.
Well, what was I saying before I got excited about the squirrel? Yes, talking about the joy. So
you're an advocate for awareness around ableism in a world that needs to really step itself up when it comes to access. You said you'd first started modelling when you were a kid, but now you're modelling, you've got this agency, Zebedee. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But how would you describe your work role? What do you think of yourself as a model? What else do you do? Are you a model activist or do you defy labels?
I feel like naturally I defy labels, like growing up and not knowing what my gender really was and what my sexuality really was, but also being raised under the rule of we don't care what you are, what you want to be, who you want to be, as long as you love people and you are kind, that's all that matters. Like, we were never raised to be racist or homophobic or xen or anything like that. As long as you're a lovely person, that's what matters, which is why I think I don't care what my partner has between their legs. As long as they have that loving mindset, that's who I want to be with.
Gift of your parents having the right way to look at the world.
Yeah, I was very lucky.
What pronouns do you choose to use?
I use they, them pronouns. I accept that people will automatically want to use she, her pronouns for me based on how I look, because I am not able to medically transition in any kind of way. Doesn't make me very comfortable, but like, I accept that that's just how things are going to be sometimes. Like, unless I've specifically said, these are my pronouns, please use them, and people deliberately disrespect that, that's when I'll have an issue.
But when we talk about sustainability, including, as it must do, ethics across the board, diversity, inclusion, belonging across the board, not just saying sustainability is material use or whatever it is that some people want to say, these things do matter. And I want this conversation to be about how important it is to bring those things together.
I think that obviously we want everything to be as accessible and inclusive as possible. An example I like to use is that my mum has early onset dementia. She's had it for, I want to say, about 10 years now. Hasn't progressed very much because we have the right combination of medication going on, the right like routines, and just we're keeping everything on track. But she's still learning. And she actively, like, my partner's also non-binary, uses they, them pronouns. And she leads so far and tries to be correct that she goes the opposite way and starts using she, her, rather than like he, him. And it's like, with my mum, who has early onset dementia and these other issues that are going on, people are capable of learning.
Yeah.
And there are going to be some people who are so set in their ways that they're going to remain ignorant. It's a choice of whether you want to argue with a brick wall or realize that you are who you are and you have the right people around you and you can choose whether those people will stay around you.
Yeah. I was going to say also, is there an element of, and I don't, maybe you'll disagree with me, which is good, but is there an element of pick your battles? You can't change everyone and every single thing, and part of it's about intention, surely.
I agree with you. I think it is picking your battles. I can't put myself in situations where I could be attacked, whether it's physically or verbally. Am I able to handle an attack that day? Like, how strong am I feeling within myself? Because
can't,
like,
take it on.
You
it's
can't,
not your
you
job
can't
to fix everyone's
everything.
Failings, right?
Exactly.
But I was also thinking, when there is so much on your shoulders, when you're trying to change systems that are built not for you and seem to overlook you in so many different ways, how do you choose where you want to put your energy to fight? And also, in brackets, shouldn't be your job.
There are a lot of things that shouldn't be my job in many aspects of my life that I have learned to just get on with. It wasn't my job at like 14 to look after my mum, but I still did it whilst I was still trying to figure out my own health stuff. There's a lot of things that you are forced into in life. So when it comes to advocacy and things like that, I pick my battles because I have friends who are also advocates that are white, and I know they're more likely to be listened to for certain things over what I'm likely to be listened over. So I have to pick and choose.
Really?
Whether, yeah, the ableism, there's still racism in ableism. Like, it all entwines. And if I feel like I'm not being heard, I have other people that can say, hey, I'm trying to raise information on this issue. Can you help me? And they are always willing. They are aware of what privileges they have, and I'm lucky to have them in my corner as much as I know that they have me in their corner. So it's just about figuring out who needs to speak and when until people are willing to listen.
I mean, I feel like I keep pulling these faces at you because I feel frustrated at the system and I'm not living through it. And yet my reaction is just to feel kind of rage. But you don't seem to espouse that.
I have my moments. Yeah. I have the same rule for everything, which is I can be angry, I can be mad, I can be sad, I can feel all those negative feelings, but only for a very limited amount of time. And then you turn it and you use it and you make it your superpower. Because what is the point in having that bitterness and that sadness in your heart? All it's going to do is drag you down. Switch it around. Turn it into what you need it to be. My art teacher in school, when he was teaching us how to use watercolor paints, he said, don't paint what you think you see. Paint what you actually see, which is you see all the colors and the shades and stuff. Paint that first. And when you look back at the picture, you'll see the full image.
Wow.
So I try to use that in every aspect that I can.
You're a very beautiful speaker about tough stuff, Junior.
Thank you. I think I've been through enough. I've been through the anger and not being able to express myself. And now it's just really important to me that if I'm going to be angry, I want it to be known exactly why I'm angry, not for there to be any speculation about it. If I'm really angry, that's why.
Yeah. I want to get back to modelling. While she's primarily a writer, Kia Brown also modelled for Tommy Hilfiger's Tommy Adaptive line. And she talked to me about how confronting it can be when you're a person with a disability, she says, feeling like people are looking at you or judging you. And that's already a really fraught experience. But when you do that for your job, how do you kind of navigate that when you've got people looking at you as your job? Let's talk about modelling and why you do it and how the experience is for you.
So personally, I really love modelling. I can't work a full-time job anymore. It's just not safe for me. It's not possible anymore. But being able to model means that I can take 1 or 2 days out of a week, every few weeks, depending on how the jobs come in. And I can just pack my day from the crack of dawn to the evening, being surrounded by like-minded people. Now, a lot of them still are learning. And that's fine. They will ask me the questions. They will want to know. We have access riders through my agency where they are sent my allergies, my access needs, whether I'm coming with my wheelchair, knowing that I have a carer that comes with me. It's very important to me to know that I am protected.
Did you just use the term riders?
Yes.
So like when a musician, I'm going to say something silly, but it's true. When I think about riders, I think about a musician saying, I want this kind of blue M&Ms.
Yeah.
That's specifically sorry, but that is the tabloid headline for the rider for, I don't know, Jennifer Lopez or whatever.
Yeah, that's exactly it, but they're access riders. So,
but is that a phrase? It's good to hear it.
Yeah, yeah, and it should. I mentioned this as well at the event that every job should have access riders. Everyone should know what their employees' needs are.
Yeah, I mean, this to me is actually revelationary because I used to work as a music journalist and that word rider was associated with that, you know, like whoever it is wants, I don't know, a particular kind of sandwich. But this is so important. This is about what allows you to do your job, not what whim do you have to have a good time backstage.
Yeah.
But like what allows you to be present and do your best work and not be faced with stupid accessibility challenges before you even get there.
Yeah. It also ensures that when I am booked for a job or like I'm heavily penciled for a job, the production company can then contact my agent and say, okay, well, here's the width of the doorway. Or there's like a very small lip and then we'll get pictures come through. So then I'm mentally prepared as well for what I'm going to see at this particular shoot or event that I'm going to.
Obviously, your agency is brilliant and it's exciting to work with an agency that is focusing on this area. They're called Zebedee Talent.
Yes.
And actually, Junior, you're in a new 3-part documentary series on Channel 4 that's focused on this agency. Mm-hmm. I watched it. Congratulations.
Thank you. I haven't even watched it.
What? I've seen it and you haven't. It's just out.
I've just had like some stuff going on where I want, when I watch it, I want it to be like my sole focus. I've seen a preview. I know that there are some very important things that they didn't use in the actual show, which was like a little disappointing for me because it would have been very important to show the struggles, but also being able to see my friends and seeing how they're succeeding and that most of them are saying a lot of what I wanted to say makes me so happy and I'm so proud.
Congratulations. It is actually a lovely piece of filmmaking. Before we get on to that and what you did at London Fashion Week that is in the show, just talk a bit about Zebedee Talent. What do they do and how and why?
So I've been with Zebedee for 4 years now and it has been a journey. So my first year, silent, I think I did about two jobs in that first year. And then I got a job with Adidas in Amsterdam. I think it was like 2 months into me dating my partner. So that was like, do you want to come? Made it a great trip. And then from there, I shaved my hair and it was just this intense blow up of, I think I got about 40 jobs under my belt in 6 months.
And these are big brands. I've seen you in Sephora.
Yeah, I love working with Sephora. Sephora, most accessible brand that I've ever worked with. Absolutely cherish the relationship that I have with many people in that company. Like with Zebedee, I've got advocates by my side, not behind me, not in front of me, but by my side.
Just tell us what the agency does.
So Zebedee, they represent people with physical differences, disabilities, neurodivergence, so on and so forth, like different body types, but not people that you would see typically in media and fashion shows. They bring real life people to the forefront and fight for us. Like they push us into the spotlight because who doesn't want to see people that look like them? Like I remember the only person that I had to look up to who was disabled and black was Ade Abbotton, who was on CBBC. He did The Adventures. He did basketball, things like that. Like he was the only positive person I had to look up to. Every other representation that I had seen was negative and like trying to heal people with disabilities and they were dying on TV shows and just weren't very important characters. And now Zebedee have created this opportunity for people to be in a positive light.
Mm.
And I didn't realize how much we lacked seeing ourselves until suddenly there's this whole massive group of us.
When we talk about inclusivity in this topic, we're not just talking about someone who may be a wheelchair user. It can be this whole gamut of communities that are underrepresented when it comes to being seen in fashion shows, but also being on corporate teams, C-suites, all the rest of it. But Zebedee's models include, for example, Georgia's got
amputation.
Amputation.
Yep. She was hit by a bus and lost her leg and is constantly gaining that confidence in who she is with her new body type and the judgment from other people, and just seeing her growth has been incredible. Nan, who has like albinism, and they won't take
gorgeous,
anyone.
Gorgeous.
They don't take
very
anyone's
cool looking person.
Mess. Like they know who they are. They are so sure of themselves. Ellie, who has Down syndrome, most confident person I've ever met. She's such a sweetheart, has so much love and just wants to make you laugh. It just really showcases everyone's personalities and that we are just, again, normal people who have a lot of love to give.
But thanks also for touching on that, because it's about this whole spectrum of reasons why you may be not in the mainstream, in inverted commas, of what's been represented so far in fashion, right?
Yes.
It's not just disability.
No, I think it's differences. It's just who
difference.
You are.
Why is that word difference so divisive? Isn't everybody different?
Exactly. But they, I feel like the community and the society, should I say, if you are slightly different, you could be autistic, you have ADHD, you could have bipolar disorder, it could be something neurological, you're different. A lot of people who have disabilities won't identify themselves as having disabilities.
They try to hide it.
That and disability has always been like mostly stuck with people who are in wheelchairs or have clear physical differences to, in quotations, normal people, that I feel like it's almost a reclaiming of the word. It's like how I say I identify as queer. People, like my mum doesn't like the word queer because when she was growing up, it was used as a slur. And I'm like, no, I'm reclaiming that. I don't identify as these other labels, but queer seems to fit me really nicely. Disability is seen as a dirty word. Oh, don't say that they're disabled. Say they're differently abled. Most of us do not like differently abled.
Really?
But we're
the language is scary if you're not familiar with it, because there's so much possibility for causing offence. And if you really don't want to do that, like, ask. I really don't want to do that. Then you feel scared. Like, am I using the right term? Is limb difference the right way?
You can use limb difference. Yeah. It's very individual to people. Just ask. There's no harm. You'd ask someone their pronouns. You ask someone their name. You ask someone what colour their eyes are if you aren't sure. There's no, just ask. But if you're comfortable sharing with me, what word would you use so that I can refer to you correctly?
That's good. Thank
it's,
you.
It's simple.
It is simple when you put it like that. Thank you. I want to talk about representation. Why does it matter?
If you can't see yourself in an item of clothing, if you can't see yourself working a corporate job, if you can't see yourself working in a bank, all because there's not that representation, are you going to believe that's something you can wear, that you can do, that you can be a part of? I didn't know. When I've done, for example, working for Sephora, I've done a couple of their grand openings, and I've had multiple people, whether they've been disabled themselves or have a member of their family who is disabled, come up to me and say, oh my goodness, can I take a picture of you to show this person that I love, because we didn't know that these opportunities were available. And it always shocks me, because I'm like, thinking back a couple of years ago, I didn't know it was possible. And now other people do know. And if you can't see yourself because there's no representation, then what are you going to aim for? You're going to aim for what society wants you to think you can do. If not, you're going to be stuck at home.
Mm. You said during the talk at Westminster that COVID had actually opened up some of this for you because everybody was stuck at home.
Yeah.
And everybody then had a kind of forced reckoning with what it is like to not be able to simply run out there and go out. Yeah.
Yeah. Pre-COVID, working from home was a very rare thing. You working remotely just wasn't possible unless you were part of one of these huge, massive corporations and you were really high up and you could just pop open your laptop, type a few emails, and someone else does all the dirt work for you. During COVID, look how many companies were going to be shut down and no longer running because they needed their employees to work and they were not allowed legally to go into work. I'm legally not allowed to work a 9-to-5 job, and yet those opportunities would never be open to me. Suddenly, working from home was completely normal. You could work from home in your pajamas, eat snacks whenever you want. People were finding ways to get away with not working whilst pretending they were working. Like, I was seeing all these mechanisms hooked up to the mouse through a computer to make it look like you were still moving because they were being monitored. Yeah, their mouse movement was being monitored. And as soon as lockdown started to be lifted, I'm seeing people being forced back into work and they don't want to go. They've realised what they consider the high life to be working from home because it's more accessible to them. There are people who are out here with long COVID because they caught it during that time period and working from home was like a gift from the universe. Like, where has it gone?
You also said that during COVID, in terms of modelling, it opened up this idea of self-taping. So that's when, instead of having to physically arrive for a casting, you could video yourself and send it in and be considered, yeah?
Yes. So I joined my agency it was the end of July, beginning of August. And I hadn't realised that castings were even like really a thing, especially having to go to them on a regular basis. So I was shoved straight into doing self-tapes. That was the norm for me. And then obviously as lockdown started to lift, that's when going to castings started. And I was like, whoa, this is way too much physical movement for me. I cannot get to and from a casting by myself with my wheelchair. Cabs are expensive, especially going to central London. Thank the universe for the taxi card scheme.
Which is?
Taxi card scheme is for people with disabilities or differences who have proof, unfortunately. You get a little identification card and a certain amount of trips per year, and the government pays for some of those trips. So the minimum I will ever pay, I think, is £7.80. And the maximum that I will ever pay is about £32, around that mark. And it just means that I can get to and from appointments, to and from work, to and from pretty much anywhere, for a lot less money, but in a more accessible way, so I can actually take my wheelchair with me.
Ginny, when you spoke last week, you said there were a number of things that need to be addressed to create access in the workplace. One of them was that we need more research into how to make workplaces more accessible. And he said, we have to ask real disabled people what their access needs would be and remember that not everyone's are the same. You also said, and I noted this down when I heard you talk, Jeannie, because I wanted to talk about it a bit today. People with disabilities are just that. We're people and should be treated with a positive, brackets, not condescending attitude, just like you would anyone else. Let's talk about this idea of condescension.
People have this assumption, which really does my head in, that I am not capable of speaking and not capable of advocating for myself. Prime example, I just got back from holiday last week, going through airport security, doing the passport control thing, and the security person, I spoke to him when I handed him the passports. He proceeded to ask my partner all the questions about me, to which I aren't, and obviously I can't be rude to a passport security guard, and I'm not trying to be on the no-fly list. That's not something I'm willing to do. I like to travel. We are not children who are unable to speak for ourselves. We are not two-year-olds where you need to ask our parents or our carers, would you like a cup of tea? Can you hold a cup? Can you do this? Can you do that? Ask. Speak to us first. I may be in a wheelchair. I may have a cane. But still approach me first. Like, it's not difficult. And doing the whole, oh,
you poor thing.
I hate it. I get people who pass me and go, oh, I was on the phone to the hospital today and the receptionist went, oh, and I'm like, I'm not a puppy. I am not 2 years old. I don't need to be infantilized. No one needs to be infantilized. We are adults. We are grown. Don't talk to us as if we do not understand what's going on. We understand. We are very aware. And it's not difficult to speak to us as people.
I mean, it's also, let's come back to this next step from representation, because obviously representation is important and we've talked about why, but the next step has to be, as you'd said here, about ask real disabled people what they need, who's at the table and who's being asked, who's making the decisions, rather than decisions being made for you by others, and certainly not with that sort of condescending tone. What would you like to see?
I would like to see more disabled people being brought in to corporate spaces, even if just for research. Bring in a variation of people. I do jobs where I do like public research and then I get paid like a little £50 on the side just to answer some questions. Bring in 10 disabled people, even 7, even 5 of different abilities and ask them what they would need. Bring in the people that you're working with who would consider themselves to have access needs and ask them what they need. Have an accessible toilet. Ask if the toilet's big enough. Don't hold stuff in the toilet. Don't make it a storage unit. Check if people's chairs are okay for them. You can get tints for computer screens. There are so many discreet things that you can do if you need to be discreet, which it shouldn't be because it's not a shameful thing, to make a public space more accessible. Ramps, making sure the lifts are serviced on a regular basis because lifts are constantly broken. Getting cushions for people to work. Like, just there are ways that you can bring people in and you'll find that the things that they need genuinely are very small, not expensive things. It's not difficult to do. It's just ask disabled people.
Sinead Burke, who I mentioned before, these days has also got a consultancy. It's called Tilting the Lens. I remember when we did the podcast, which was 5 years ago now, and she was wearing custom Gucci. And then when I spoke with Kia Brown a year later, she said, I wish I could wear some Gucci, you know, custom Gucci if you're famous, because Sinead's given TED Talks and she's a wonderful fashion journalist. So she has that privilege of being a bit of a celebrity. She's that one person in the room rather than for everybody, right? And she talks about how she doesn't want that to be the case. But with her new agency, she's been advising brands on how they can genuinely step up their action on this beyond simple representation. Gucci in 2022 became the first high street retailer to become a certified participant in the annual Disability Equality Index, which is like this joint venture from various groups. It's like the American Association of People with Disabilities, disability.in, which is a global inclusion network. But the point is, they're all getting together to try and figure out like what's your score and what you're actually doing to make the workplace accessible and inclusive. Obviously, more brands could do this, but we're only at the very early stages of it. You suggested a few ideas when we were in Parliament the other day. But what do you say to the brands you work with through modelling? Anything or nothing?
I say stuff.
Yeah.
If I don't feel it's my place to say things, then I will feedback to my agent, who will then feedback to the production team. But I'm always giving suggestions, because if I see someone that isn't right, I'm not going to hold my tongue unless... like going back to the picking my battles, if it's going to put me in a compromised position, I'll hold it and I'll wait until I'm out of that situation. If that brand chooses not to work with me again, that tells me more about them.
It's also, like I was saying at the beginning, exhausting to be always having to be the one pointing it out, right? You're there to do your job. You should be allowed to just do it, not have to then revolutionise what they do in the C-suite at the same time.
But I also think about who's coming in after me. And if I can protect someone else that's coming in after me, I'm going to... say, I don't do this for me and what I can benefit from. Like, that's not why I do pretty much anything unless I'm baking something. I think about how I could like make things just a little bit easier for someone. And if me saying, hey, this toilet that is meant to be accessible is full up of cleaning supplies and I can't even turn around in my chair in there, someone could come in with a power chair behind me and they are not going to be able to get in there to use the toilet. And if they need a carer to help them, definitely not. If I think that there's someone on that set who is not being reasonable or is being condescending or is doing something that just makes me uncomfortable, that means it's probably going to make someone else uncomfortable. And again, if I have to wait until I'm away from the set to say something, I'm going to do it, but I don't want to embarrass them. I want them to be educated. I don't want them to lose their job. I want them to learn. And that is what is most important.
Purely looking at fashion and from your own experience, do you think we are improving? It's getting better?
I think that within the brands that I've worked with, I see improvement. There are a lot of brands that I have worked with repeatedly, and they are so willing to take on board whatever's being said and to fix things. I think that certain brands do not want to listen because they have found their target audience and that's who they are aiming towards, and the whole tokenism thing comes in. And it has gotten me to the point where if I get to have those one-to-one Zoom calls, I will ask, am I the only one? Am I the darkest person you're going to have on set? Whether it's people like production team or whether it's models, I need to know that I'm not your sole tokenism person.
It's just been London Fashion Week just before we're recording this, but the previous season, and we see this in the documentary, you were part of a show called London Represents.
Yes, I was.
Laura Winston, who is co-founder of Zebedee, was interviewed for a piece that I read in Dazed magazine talking about, yes, there's been so much progress. There's a lot more interest in inverted or commas diversity casting when it comes to magazine shoots, to Fashion Week. But during that season of London Fashion Week, which I think was spring 23, she and her team had reached out to every designer on the list, but they'd only placed four models.
Mm-hmm. I have so much that I could say about that time period that I am actively choosing not to. Because I think they are things that I need to deal with behind the scenes. I'm not about shaming, but I think it is devastating that there are so many of us disabled models out there who are able to work these jobs. I'm trying to find the way to say this without coming across as like me trying to sound privileged or anything like that. I'm aware that I was very lucky to be in the shows that I was in. But there was so much more room. There was so much more room. And there were so many more capabilities. And if it's about body type, which it should never be, there was a variety of body types available. There were just people who had the experience as well. Why is the only question that I ever have? Why not pick more people? Why not want people from those communities to want to buy your product or to help fund your product. Why is it such a big issue for disabled people not to be included? Just why? That's all I can ask, is just why.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Good question.
I find hope in that more of us are standing together. I think that the more voices that you have, whether you're talking, whispering, or shouting, it's going to sound loud. So having not only the disabled people, people with differences all band together, we have people who are able-bodied who are willing to uplift us and to help raise our voices and not speak for us. That's such a key thing in not speaking for us. So now that we are establishing our ground and now that we are like marching up this mountain together, we aren't going to take no for an answer anymore.
Yes. So
it's just determination. Yeah. Like, and the people are hearing that thunder of us like walking up that mountain, more doors are going to open, more spaces are going to be filled. It's not going to be a tokenism thing. People are going to realize that you're going to get more hype from the variety of bodies that you have on that runway from people who actually are going to go out there and buy things, not people who are just sitting by to take pictures.
This has been the greatest podcast I've ever done with two chihuahuas.
Honestly, I love being able to speak about these things and to have someone listen and ask the questions that need to be asked. It means a lot to me.
Thank you for listening to Wardrobe Crisis. You can find the show notes for each episode over on our website, www.thewardrobecrisis.com. And that's where you can also sign up for our free sustainable fashion newsletters. I hope you've enjoyed the show. I'd love you to help us spread the word. Tell a friend, share on social media, or leave us a rating and review in Apple Podcasts. It really helps new listeners find us on the app. You can get in touch with us on social media. The show is on Instagram at The Wardrobe Crisis, and I'm on there too. And on Twitter, I'm at Mrs. Press.
Because I love you, because I love you, because I love you.